the funding presentation.
Good afternoon, Chairman Corbett, members of the board. I'm Charles Reed again. This is item six. Subject title is Funding and Technical Assistance Opportunities for Wastewater Projects Serving Small and Disadvantaged Communities. So if it hasn't been obvious, these last three and the previous two presentations are related. First, Connor talked about the magnitude of need for financial assistance in the North Coast region. 67% of the small communities or that we looked at were disadvantaged in some fashion and needed assistance for compliance assistance, technical assistance, and for routine upgrades and needed upgrades for their wastewater treatment plants. Alita talked about the Russian River TMDL and expressed the need for financial assistance for disadvantaged people within the Russian River watershed who will need to comply with that TMDL, and the importance of the financial assistance for the success of that TMDL. So with those two concepts in mind, we invited some of our partners in at the State Board and in some nonprofit organizations who are involved in providing grant funds or technical assistance to small disadvantaged communities. And with that, I will turn it over to our three. Let me first introduce our three presenters, and I'll start with Jennifer Toney. She's with the State Water Board's Division of Financial Assistance, and she'll be talking about what kind of grants and loans are out there for disadvantaged communities. We'll follow with Brian Phillips and Karen McBride from the Rural Community Assistance Corporation, also known as RCAC, and we'll finish with Catherine Gledhill, who is with the North Coast Resources Partnership. Okay, so I'll turn it over to Jennifer.
Great, good afternoon. Excuse me, members of the board. My name is Jennifer Toney. I'm the senior for the Small Community Wastewater Unit in the Office of Sustainable Water Solutions. The Office of Sustainable Water Solutions. Oh, maybe if I move it closer. Is that better?
That's better.
Okay, and then let me see if I know how to use this here. So, the Office of Sustainable Water Solutions is within the Division of Financial Assistance, and I wanted to point this out because I thought it would be helpful to see how our section works together. Our section's goal is to provide funding for drinking water and wastewater, and also to provide technical assistance to small disadvantaged communities. So I know everyone's more interested in the funding, so I'll go quickly through this. But it was established by AB 92 so that we could have one section that focused on disadvantaged communities. Our three key functions, project funding, fostering partnerships with communities, and the technical assistance providers. So here's our overview of the funding that the State Water Board received through Proposition 1. Today I'm going to focus on the $260 million that was allocated for wastewater grant funding. So funding available for small community wastewater projects. Like I said, I manage the Small Community Wastewater Unit. That unit receives funding, grant funding, from two sources. $260 million we receive from Prop 1. And we receive $8 million annually from what we call the small community grant SCG charge. And that's available for communities, like Connor Mack indicated, population less than 20,000 and the MHI less than 80% of the statewide MHI. We also have the Clean Water State Revolving Fund. This is low interest loan program that's available to any eligible applicant for an eligible project. So this is not limited to only small and disadvantaged communities. The Clean Water SRF fund has $28 million in principal forgiveness, which essentially acts like a grant. It's just federal funding, so we call it principal forgiveness. And that is for green project reserve funding. So if you have an energy efficiency project or a water efficiency project, you can receive principal forgiveness. And then we have our SRF low interest loans. Currently the rate's 1.7% with a 30-year repayment term. So even if you don't qualify as small disadvantage, it's still a good interest rate and a good term for the loan. So our small community grant fund, like I just went over, this is how you qualify: the population, the MHI. That MHI is the 2014 data. We're using 2014 American Community Survey data. We get new data around every December, January, every year. So that's the number that we're looking at right now to be considered a disadvantaged community. Our small community grant program is administered through the Clean Water SRF program. What that means is that it's the same application for the Clean Water program, small community grant program. And it also means that the policy of the Clean Water SRF program is what we use as guidelines for implementation. Our maximum grant amounts are adopted by the State Water Board every year in the intended use plan, and I'll go over those next. We have funding for planning and construction projects. The eligible applicants are public agencies, nonprofits, federally recognized tribes, and state tribes. To be eligible, because we're implemented through the Clean Water SRF policy, you need to have an eligible project listed in the Clean Water Act, and I listed a few examples below: wastewater treatment plant upgrades, construction of new treatment plants, collection systems, recycled water projects, and we also can fund replacement repair for septic systems, or we can also fund septic to sewer projects. This is in all 11, just a few of our most common project types. Planning grants. So our planning grants are 100% grant, as long as you qualify as small disadvantaged, not to exceed $500,000. There's no match required. The goal of our planning projects is to assist with project feasibility and also help the small communities prepare the required items that are needed for construction applications. The goal is really to help them move to construction funding. A lot of times the planning for small disadvantaged communities is difficult for them to fund by themselves, so that's where our planning grants come in. And here's examples of eligible costs that we can fund under planning. So our construction grants. So you don't have to come to us for planning grants if you don't want to. It's just out there to help the small communities. Here's our construction grant eligibility table. Let's see if I can use the pointer here. You'll see we have tiered grant eligibility. So in the middle there, the disadvantaged community that's less than 80% of the statewide MHI, as long as their wastewater rates are at or above 1.5%, they would qualify for 75% grant. And that little footnote, 47, let's see if I can point to it here, right there. The footnote says that if during our financial review that we determine that the community is incapable of paying the 25% loan on the total project cost, we can fund 100% grant funded for construction. The maximum is still $6 million. And the maximum cost per household, that's a policy threshold that if we determine that the project cost is more than $30,000 per household, we consider it a high-cost project, so we have to take it to the State Water Board for approval. This is our second construction grant eligibility table. This table is for our septic to sewer and our regional projects, and you'll notice that we have a higher maximum grant amount for these projects. The max grant amount is $8 million per project, and the max cost per household is $60,000. And we raise the grant amount so that we can get more communities to move forward with these projects, and also these projects tend to be more costly, so that's why the higher grant amount. And this table, if you look in our IUP, has several footnotes, but I tried to pull out the most important ones so I can give you all the information. Small community grant projects also need to be geared toward addressing primarily residential needs. 50% of the dwellings or dwelling units must be the primary dwelling. A single community cannot receive cumulative more than $8 million in grants or principal forgiveness in a five-year period. And the planning grant amount is subtracted from the construction maximum. So if you receive a $500,000 planning grant and you move to construction and your max grant amount under construction would be $6 million, then we would take out the planning grant. So the max construction grant would be $5.5 million. So we talked a lot about median household income, and we get the question a lot, well, how do you determine this? How do we verify? Typically, we get potential applicants that call the Division of Financial Assistance, either myself or my staff, and ask us, well, we don't know if we qualify. Can you give us a preliminary number? These are the methods that we use to determine that. Or if we get an application in, and an applicant claims a certain median household income, this would be how we would verify it. So we can do it before, or we can do it after we have an application. I have quite a few staff that are very willing to help if you want us to look at the numbers. And here's the three ways, and I'm going to go through examples just so you can see what it looks like. If it's a city or a census-designated place, it would be listed in the 2014 American Community Survey data. And you'll see for ease of use, we have two columns, and this is public information, so if anyone wants a copy of this, what we've done is we've simplified it so we can look very quickly. Is it a small disadvantaged community? Is it a small, severely disadvantaged community? So the city of Willows, you'll see, yes, it's a small disadvantage, but no, it's not a small, severely disadvantaged. This gives us kind of a preliminary start of where you might fall in the construction eligibility grant amount. For the planning grants, as long as you're a yes in this column, then we move forward. We don't need the determination. There's no difference in the planning grants versus a small community versus a small, severely disadvantaged community. Just in the construction grants, you can receive more if you're a small, severely disadvantaged community. So a lot of times the applicant or the affected community is not in our American Community Survey data. So our other option is to use GIS data. I know we got a question earlier, what's a community? So if it's a wastewater treatment plant upgrade project or a collection system upgrade project and they have a wastewater service area and they're not on the American Community Survey spreadsheet that I just showed you, then we'll ask them for a service area map, and we use the service area as the community boundary. So in this instance, the yellow is the service area boundary, and these red outlines are our American Community Survey block group data. So what we do is we do a calculation based on the amount of block group area in that service area to come up with the preliminary number. And a lot of times a potential applicant or community feels that these numbers that we pull from either the data or the GIS is not representative of the community. So we recommend that they do an income survey. The income surveys are good for 5 years. They're conducted by an independent third party. We do a lot of income surveys with RCAC, and they're here to talk a little bit more about their capability and what they can provide for technical assistance. If we suggest an income survey, an applicant or potential applicant can request approval from the State Water Board, we'll send you income survey guidelines as long as you follow those. We'll use it to qualify you for grant funding, and we can reimburse this once a planning grant or a construction grant has an agreement. We can't pay for it up front, but we can reimburse it later. Process for funding. So, like I said, we're administered through the Clean Water SRF program. So we have one application that we use for planning and design projects. We have another application that we use for construction projects. A lot of our construction projects are dual funded. They get loans and grants. So, the one application gives you access to both of those without having to fill out multiple applications. We process it at the same time. It saves time, paperwork for everyone. And we do promote co-funding with other agencies. A lot of our projects are dual funded with USDA, HUD, and we're willing to work early on in the process with getting those lined up for small communities. So you don't have to get all the funding from us. You can get grant funding from other sources and grant funding from us and not take a loan. We have a lot of projects that do that. But the loan component is always there if it's needed. All our applications are submitted online through our FAST system. And we have the construction application, general, technical, environmental. These are our four packages. The applications are triaged, so we have one person that reviews all the applications coming in, and if they feel it's a potential small disadvantaged community project, they'll send it to my unit, and we'll make a determination and contact the applicant. So spend a lot of time on getting the application in, how you get, you're deemed eligible for grant funding, but the question comes up a lot. Well, if small communities don't always have the capability to prepare the applications or prepare those documents that are required in our application process, so then what do we do? And that's where our technical assistance unit comes in. And this is just a figure that shows that how we pull the technical assistance together and we fund projects and we work with the agency partners and the stakeholders. So our technical assistance, our Proposition 1 funds, all of the funds that I showed in the pie chart, a portion of those funds go to providing technical assistance. So we have $85 million available, and here's a list of some of the ways that we can use technical assistance to bridge those gaps. So we used to be more limited in the past with what we could use for technical assistance funding for, but now we're able to give technical assistance for legal assistance, for preparation of engineering documents, environmental documents. And here is a list of all the projects that we have with Region 1 that we are currently working on. And the challenges for small systems, I know Connor McIndy touched a lot on this, and so I thought that I would kind of go over how our section tries to help with these challenges with the engineering, legal, and environmental expertise. If there's not time or the expertise to prepare these items, we can refer them to TA. The technical assistance providers can help fill out all the packages and the lack of funding to build and maintain adequate wastewater facilities, that's where the grant funding and the low interest loans comes in. We're hoping that these help offset the cost to the residents. The establishing rates, this is often a big hurdle in our construction projects, whether you need to establish new rates or do rate increases. Our technical assistance providers can help with public outreach before the rate increase is adopted. They can go out to meetings, get the word out, but it's always hard to do rate increases, and we realize that, and we try and work with the community to get them the best funding package available so that the rates that they set aren't as high. Recruitment and retention of qualified operators. We do have technical assistance for this. It's not commonly known, but we can refer them to TA and they can come out and help with operational expertise and training. And challenges for septic projects. I wanted to touch on this because of the prior presentations. And the first hurdle for septic projects, and when I say septic projects, I'm referring to either septic replacement projects or septic to sewer projects, is who will be the applicant. We do need an eligible applicant. The private homeowners can't come to us directly for funding. So typically it's the county that acts as the eligible applicant for those communities. And the county works more as a pass-through for funding in that instance for the septic replacement. Nonprofits can be the applicant, or if it's a septic to sewer project, the municipality that's taking on the waste from that small community can also be the applicant. Determining the MHI for septic projects often needs income surveys, just because the size of the community in these projects are often smaller than our American Community Survey block data goes down to. So often that American Community Survey block data is not representative of the community. For the septic to sewer projects, establishing rates or assessment so that they can show that they have the capability in the future of providing operation and maintenance costs, because we want to make sure that if we're funding a project that it is going to be a sustainable project. This is often a hurdle. Access to private property will need proof from the applicant that when before they go out and do any construction on private property, that they've got the homeowner's approval for this, and also have approval in the future to do potential inspections. And then operation and maintenance for both types of septic projects is often a hurdle. How you show that without a revenue stream in place. And the reason why, you know, every application that we get for these types of projects, the way we overcome these challenges is a little different. It really just depends on the project. But with these types of projects, we recommend that you come to us for funding early on, so that we can work through these hurdles, and you know, we're willing to work with communities and applicants and the regional board, and try and find a solution for these communities. So what's the good news? We've talked about the challenges. The good news is we have a lot of funding available. So far, out of the $260 million, we've only awarded $11 million. That's because we've mainly been awarding planning grant funding, and those grant amounts are smaller. So once the construction project funding starts ramping up, those take a little bit, the construction projects take a little bit longer to get through our funding process. Then we'll see that amount of funding go a little bit quicker. We have plenty of technical assistance staff, and my staff are always willing to help overcome the challenges. Open application process means you can apply anytime, and we have quite a bit of funding available. Even looking at the list of projects that we have that we're working on, we have about 50 active projects. Even if we funded all of those with the maximum grant amounts they are eligible for, we still have plenty of Prop 1 funding left. So, and here's all the contacts. My supervisor is Ms. Julie Rosardo. She's the chief of the Office of Sustainable Water Solutions. And there's my contact information. Ms. Bridget Chase is the senior for the Small Drinking Water Unit. And then Ms. Megan Tosney is the Prop 1 Technical Assistance Unit senior. So I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has.
Mr. Chair. Yes. Jennifer, thank you. Hey, come back to my question. You know, I asked what a community is because,
right,
you know, we had a discussion this morning. Forgive me, I didn't notice if you were here this morning or not. But when we talked about the on-site waste treatment,
right,
and Russian River and all that, because that's really septics. That's individual septics, right?
Right?
In for the most part, unincorporated county areas, not a district boundary. So can sub-districts be formed for the say like community X, that's essentially a small community within, say for this instance, Sonoma County, and it had 500 septic systems in a small community area. Can you create a boundary then for the purpose of doing this?
Yes, we can. So we have a little more flexibility with our septic projects, and I really don't have an example of like a septic replacement project where we've defined the boundary, but we do. We had a septic to sewer project, and the entity, the applicant itself, was large and was not disadvantaged, but they had a small, you know, kind of area, community, neighborhood that was severely disadvantaged, and we used the median household income and the population of just that subset to qualify them for grant funding.
So they
so
could
we can define it. Yeah, we have a little bit of flexibility when you're applying, you know, and I've talked with the regional board staff, Charles Reed and Claudia Villacorta, when we're talking about planning and construction, how you define the community, we can do a planning grant that covers multiple small disadvantaged communities, and out of that planning grant you can have multiple construction projects, so it might make sense to do it that way. You know, without having a map and looking at communities,
right,
we're willing to work with those communities to set it up and structure it and give you guidance.
As a follow-up to that, then, say the if a county acts as the applicant for that defined boundary, then does that county then take on any financial responsibility for that process? Or you mentioned it was a pass-through, but is there a financial risk to them?
So it would depend. For the planning grants, there's no, you know, financial risk. It's all 100% grant funding when they qualify. We do a preliminary financial review. We would just look at the county's financials. When we go to construction, it really depends whether there's a loan component. If it's a, you know, if there's a loan component, then yes, the applicant would hold the financial responsibility for repaying the loan. If it acts as a pass through, like a mini grant type of program, so we would give the county, say, X number of dollars to do X number of septic replacements, then they act as a pass-through. If it's only grant, then there's not as many financial requirements in our application package.
I'm hearing flexibility in the process.
Yeah. So it really depends whether it's all grant or if it's a grant loan.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I think that's all. Thank you for your excellent presentation. Okay.
Thank you.
And again, just want to encourage staff efforts to
follow through
since we have so much of our district.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to echo the thanks to Jennifer for all of your assistance in coming today.
Okay. Next item would be any additional matters.
No, hold on. We got two other speakers here.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of introduced them all at once. I would now introduce Brian Phillips.
We were so into your silent hand signals that, I'm sorry.
And I was trying to outdo myself with my first presentation today, and I think I
you're going to voice us this time.
I'm really doing a good job. So I'd like to invite up.
It's a very rich voice. I'm going to let you know.
Good. I'd like to invite Brian Phillips and Karen McBride from RCAC.
Mr. Chairman, Board, thank you very much. Wanted to kind of give you an idea. We're one of the technical assistance providers, government contractor for, yes. Oh, sure. Brian Phillips, I'm a manager for the Rural Community Assistance Corporation, and a staff member here, Karen McBride, is a technical assistance provider who's worked in the Russian River area for some many years. I live outside of Fortuna, so I'm up in Humboldt County, and manage a staff in California to provide technical assistance for our different contracts and grants that we get from state and federal governments. I'll take the flipper here, Karen. And what I'll do is I'll kind of start from a big picture look at who RCAC is, and then we'll kind of drill down to how we can kind of help the North Coast region and specifically into the Russian River area with our technical assistance. So the Rural Community Assistance Corporation, RCAC, is the western affiliate of a national program that's funded through USDA, Health and Human Services, and EPA. We get some national money that funds this network of partners, and we handle the 11 western states. So that's kind of our boundary area of where our workload is. of course, I have to learn that. So we are a nonprofit agency working in the 11 western states. Our corporate office is in West Sacramento. We have offices in each one of the 11 western states with about 120 employees. So I'd say about maybe a third of our staff is maybe in West Sacramento. Of course, we were voted the best nonprofit in Sacramento County in 2007 to work for, so we're kind of proud of that, too. So some of the services that we provide, you know, we've got three major divisions in our nonprofit corporation. One is a housing division that works on nonprofit housing. One is a loan fund, which we're capitalized at about $100 million. And then our environmental division, which Karen and I work in, and that really is work with all of the water and wastewater agencies within the region that we work in. So with that, we provide a lot of training. We've got some contracts that we do a lot of training, different types of technical assistance. We've got an economic development arm. Like I said, a loan fund, and I'll go into a little bit of information on that later. We've even got a department that does a lot of all of our publications. We do a lot of training materials on how to, for instance, how to help board members understand their roles and responsibilities for running these small water and wastewater systems. And then we've got a unit that works primarily on tribal programs, and we have a circuit rider program there that send our operational staff that deal with all of the tribes in California and Arizona. So they have a day-to-day ongoing rapport with them, and so we've had that ongoing for about 20 years or so. Some of the major funding that we receive as a nonprofit, under our federal programs, we've got the United States Department, or USDA, the Rural Development Department. We've got a big technical assistance contract with them. We work under EPA, Health and Human Services, and the U.S. Treasury Department. And then under our state programs, we've got a lot of contracts that we do for the State Water Resources Control Board. We've gotten money through the California Endowment, Community Services Department, Department of Community Services in the state of California, and the Department of Water Resources. So all of these different agencies we've contracted with to do specific things, different types of technical assistance, or, you know, helping getting their programs rolled out. So we're kind of drilling down now from our 11 western state region into Northern California here. So in 2014 and 2015, these were the different agencies that we worked with in the North Coast area, which kind of encompassed the whole North Coast regional board area here. And a lot of them are tribal, but as you can see, you know, City of Rio Del, Myers Flat, Hydesville, and then down on the coast into Westport, and then along the Russian River area here, we've got quite a few projects that we've been working on the last couple of years. So how do you get technical assistance from RCAC? And primarily it starts at the funder level. If one of our contract funders need to have us step into a community, a water, wastewater agency, and help them through either a financial track, getting them money, or helping them through some aspect of applying for a loan or a grant, then we can step in at their request. We usually have referrals come from the water board, both at the state and the regional level. We get referrals from county public works departments to help them go into different areas. and then from other nonprofit agencies also. So that's kind of how, you know, somebody will maybe match up their need with our services. So the different types of technical assistance that we kind of jump into here in California would be providing water workshops. We've got a big contract with the State Water Resources Control Board to do a lot of water workshops for operators and board members. We provide a lot of the technical managerial piece of the TMF guidance. So we jump in and do rate studies. We'll come in and do financial audits. And anything to kind of help build the capacity of the water or wastewater system. As mentioned earlier, you know, we step in and we'll do a lot of household income surveys if the if that's unknown for a particular reason or not. And then recently we've been getting into energy audits. We've got some certified energy auditors on staff that can jump in and help like wastewater systems figure out, you know, geez, is it more cost effective to start replacing some of our pumps and motors? What's it going to save us in the long run? So we can come in and provide those services. Some of the entities that we've worked with recently, just doing rate studies in the North Coast region here as an example. We've got most of those are ongoing right now. Right now. And then maybe I'll have Karen kind of talk a little bit, maybe a case study, because we're working in Monte Rio and have been there for a while and stuff. So kind of give us just a little idea.
Great. There. Thank you, Brian. Good afternoon, board. Monte Rio, I do want to point out, excuse me, that oh, I'm sorry, Karen McBride, Rural Community Assistance Corporation. Monte Rio and the Russian River effort is not new to us. I can think back actually to 1988 when I had the opportunity to implement the Sea Ranch on-site wastewater zone at that time. There were communities along the Russian River as well as Monte Rio that expressed an interest back at that time to look at ways of establishing local management entities and addressing wastewater needs. So throughout the years, I've been with RCC now for 19 years. We've worked with Monte Rio off and on over probably a period of about 10 to 12 years since being with RCC. Some of that technical assistance we provide, like Brian pointed out, is really fostering community engagement. A lot of that was mentioned before by communities coming in and speaking that they really want that local flavor, knowing that there's an advocate agency or local entity that really can express what is the best interest of the community, primarily lessons learned, what have other communities done, what have maybe some of the costs have been associated with some of the communities, and really working with the community to explore options, what is available to them out there and establishing some form of improvement for long-term sustainability. So with Monte Rio, we've been attending community advisory committee meetings. That's with local residents of Monte Rio and some surrounding communities. Also attend that, also supporting the local district supervisor and their working group, again, kind of expressing what the vision is of the supervisor for community planning. Hosting community informational forums, we have worked off and on with the staff here in hosting a series of informational forums around AB 85 and addressing what can we do, again, to kind of support the community in moving forward. Providing experience and lessons learned, as I mentioned before, again, I think communities really need to know that there is some form of expertise out there that have worked with other local communities in the area, and again, can share success stories with them. And, of course, the providing expertise in wastewater management, again, helping the community explore options. And I think you do a better job at
articulating the loan program.
I was a car salesman at one time.
RCAC is a community development financial institution that's certified by the U.S. Department of Treasury, which actually enables us to borrow money from the federal government at a low rate and turn around and loan it into disadvantaged communities. Right now, we have a loan fund that's capitalized at about $100 million, and that's a revolving loan fund. As people pay that back, we can re-loan that out. That stretches across our organization with our housing side and our environmental program side, too. So we're real easy to get short-term financing through our agency. I've seen loans turn around as fast as about 14 days or something like that, so kind of depending how they hit our loan committee. So people usually come to us if they can't get financing in some other form or not. So I just wanted to kind of mention that. And that's our contact information. Like I said, I'm up in Humboldt County. Karen's down in Sacramento. Are there any questions from the board? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here he comes again.
You liked it so much last time talking. You're well, back, you know.
Just for symmetry here, I'll do the introduction for Catherine Gledhill with the North Coast Resources Partnership. Catherine, okay. Take it away.
Thank you. Let's check this out here. Ah, there we go. Thank you so much. On behalf of the North Coast Resource Partnership, we really appreciate being able to have the opportunity to present what the North Coast Resource Partnership has been doing and upcoming funding opportunities. And I am Catherine Gledhill, staff to the North Coast Resource Partnership. I've been involved in the partnership since it was initiated in 2005, and that was in response to the 2002 water bond that enacted the Integrated Regional Water Management Program. The North Coast Resource Partnership boundary borrows the Regional Water Quality Control Board boundary. However, the partner counties do not include Lake, Glen, or Marin. Their land portions that fell within the boundary were so small that they opted to participate in other integrated regional water management programs. The partnership is held together by a non-binding memorandum of mutual understandings, and the regional contract administration is conducted by the County of Humboldt. The North Coast Partnership has adopted integrated regional water management plans in 2005, 7, and 14. The goals and objectives of the partnership are interregional cooperation, economic vitality, especially in disadvantaged communities, ecosystem conservation and enhancement, beneficial uses of water, again, especially for disadvantaged communities, climate adaptation and energy independence, and public safety, especially as it relates to flood protection. The partnership is governed by a policy review panel, which is made up of two supervisors, generally, or appointees of the boards of supervisors of each of the county partners, and then three representatives elected by the North Coast tribes. They are supported by the technical peer review committee, which are also appointed by each of the partner counties and then elected by the tribes. They are comprised of technical and agency staff, and they assist the PRP on technical and planning information as well. They review and recommend projects for funding. The North Coast Resource Partnership has really been successful primarily by staying true to some guiding principles, and those include transparent decision making, respect for local autonomy, regional equity, collaboration, and fairness. And there's a real focus on areas of common interest and priorities, and then there's a real emphasis on stakeholder outreach and participation. The partnership has received funding over time, about $3 million in planning grants and $64 million in project implementation funding. Most of that funding is through the Integrated Regional Water Management Program. However, the framework, the partnership has also attracted other funding from other state entities. Over the years, we've looked at the benefits that are associated with the various projects, mostly as a return on investment analysis of these taxpayer funds. And so to date, the partnership has been awarded funding for 88 implementation projects. We're about, I think, 40 to 50% complete on those projects. The total project cost is 95, or almost 96 million, which includes the local matching funds. And 87% of the funding go towards projects that benefit economically disadvantaged communities in the North Coast. What we've seen over the years is that has increased as each funding round has been presented. So there certainly seems to be a growing awareness about the need in the North Coast. To date, those projects have or are projected to enhance or restore 17 miles of streams and 1,300 acres of land, to remove and stabilize 6.4 million cubic yards of sediment, upgrade 180 miles of road, and conserve 2 million gallons of water per day. We've been working with economists of late to really sort of look at both the cost benefit, but to monetize some of these benefits. And we see that at the low end, it's almost $450 million in benefit. And at the very high estimate, we've got $1.3 billion in benefit. So looking forward, as you know, many state agencies are rolling out the Proposition 1 programs and their associated funding. And DWR just last week released their final Integrated Regional Water Management Guidelines and a couple of requests for proposals, primarily for disadvantaged community involvement, and then also for planning grants. At this point in time, there is no project implementation solicitation released. The statewide funding for that program is $510 million, of which the North Coast will receive $26.5 million. The Proposition 1 stipulates that 10% of a regional allocation goes towards a program to ensure disadvantaged communities are involved, have planning resources, technical assistance, et cetera. And so that is $2.65 million for the North Coast. Additionally, the Prop 1 stipulates that 10% of the implementation funding or 2.65 in the North Coast go towards projects that benefit disadvantaged communities. And that's not a problem, as most of the funding goes towards those communities in the North Coast. We are expecting that implementation project funding will occur in fiscal year 17-18, and if there is another round, that will happen likely in 19-20. The North Coast Resource Partnership is focusing now on its disadvantaged community involvement program. That will be a three-year program starting early 2017. That example activities will include needs assessment and data collection, community outreach, service provider trainings, and improving a small community toolbox that I'll discuss in a second, providing local technical assistance connecting with statewide technical assistance programs such as the state boards, and all of this towards project planning, engineering, designing, and in preparation for the Proposition Integrated Regional Water Management funding. Behind the text there, you'll see the map that the North Coast uses to define its economically disadvantaged communities. So here we have been using both track, block, and place data, and do not consider population as part of that designation. So Eureka, for instance, is eligible for funding or for disadvantaged community assistance or waivers for the funding matches and those sorts of things. So one of the primary things that this funding will help to support is a North Coast program that was initiated originally through directed DWR funding, and that is the Water and Wastewater Service Provider Support Program, especially for disadvantaged small and disadvantaged communities. That program has conducted outreach to the more than 300 service providers and CSDs in the region, and then did conduct about 40% of those folks responded, and then surveys and needs assessments were begun in any case. So in conjunction with RCAC and Cal Rural Water, the program conducted 15 capacity building workshops and trainings and developed the Small Community Toolbox, which is a one-stop resource for those CSDs. And I'll, again, talk about that in a second. And then also performed 11 demonstration projects to test the toolbox and provide engineering support. Some of those services included funding application assistance and wastewater collection system evaluation, looking at alternative septic systems, water filtration, and the like. The Small Community Toolbox is currently on the North Coast website. It's a little clunky. You have to download it onto your own website and open it up. We are really hoping to make this much more accessible to the North Coast region generally. But it provides various sections. And it allows folks to access resources for systematic management of local water and wastewater infrastructure. So planning, looking at cost estimating, creating viable financing strategies, how to conduct preliminary design studies and applications, and then sort of accessing professionals to help with the final design and constructions. There's also some great resources about operations and managements. And so we look forward to working on that. So as we look forward to the implementation funding, as I mentioned, we should probably see announcements from DWR on that funding in the next year or so. And the total amount for the North Coast should be around $22 million. That will either be in one round or over two rounds of funding. And this funding is to support multi-benefit projects that include the following project elements, everything from water supply reliability to non-point source pollution reduction, water reclamation, stormwater management, watershed management, and flood management programs. When that solicitation or that funding does become available, the technical peer review committee will develop and the policy panel will approve the project review and selection process guidelines, and as well, it'll develop and approve the applications and various support materials. That solicitation will go out to the North Coast. For anyone who is interested, please sign up on the North Coast Resource Partnership website. And then once the solicitation is out, there will be regional workshops, and staff is made available to any project proponent that requests assistance. And then after the due date, the technical peer review committee enters into a really robust review process. They review and rank the projects initially on their own and then come together for a two-day review meeting where they rank the projects and then finally select a draft suite of regional projects to present to the policy review panel. The policy review panel meets to review those, and they make the final selection and approves the suite of projects. Both of those meetings are open to the public. And then once the suite has been selected, staff then works with the various project proponents to compile all the materials required for the consolidated grant to DWR. Let's see. I just sort of wanted to mention the importance of our technical peer review committee and their project review. Because of the multi-benefit approach and diversity of eligible project types, it requires a multidisciplinary review. Our team includes a wide range of expertise, including tribal knowledge and resources, engineering, ecology, fisheries, geology, planning, and experience with water supply and wastewater systems, both small and very large. The selection process is designed for objectivity, technical merit, clear, transparent criteria, and this criteria is established by the policy review panel and by the funders. So as I mentioned, the guidelines are developed. These are developed for every round of funding, and the guidelines describe and define the project valuation roles, how projects and the public can provide input during the project review process, the conflict of interest policy, and any special considerations for the funding. It's also where the criteria is established and the scoring weighting is also established. So if there are any questions, and also here's my contact information. Thank you.
Board members? Okay.
Thank you
for your presentation.
I just want to say thank you to all of our speakers. I think that this demonstrates that there's great opportunity for partnership both with the regional board and our responsible parties for funding for this type of work. And we're grateful that all of you came and helped make it clearer that this funding is available in the process for getting it. So thanks very much.
So just a question, Mr. Chair. So Matt, after such a series of fine presentations, somebody leaves the building today in a couple of days, they think, oh yeah, I want to follow up. Can they call you or call somebody here to maybe get the contact information? Or, what role can we play to link people that have questions or needs with the presentations we heard today?
So they can certainly contact our office, and welcome to contact me or Claudia Villacorta, as our division chief. And since she worked at the Division of Financial Assistance, she's very familiar with the funding opportunities. These PowerPoint presentations will be posted on our website under the agenda for today. And so if somebody didn't get a hard copy, they'll be able to view them that way. Also, if they want to directly contact any of the panel speakers.
Do we have a section of the website that actually has resources listed like this?
We do. Our grants page talks about various funding programs and largely then provides links to the Division of Financial Assistance.
All this would be up there?
All of this is there, exactly.
Okay. And I just want to say I think NCRP is one of the most successful community regional grant organizations I'm aware of, so they have a great record. All right. And I assume we have no speaker cards. Okay. Then.